If somebody wants a free...
Okay, so I'm going to go through some questions first before we get into step nine. Do you believe that every person on step four needs an amends? No. But I believe that every person on your fourth step needs to be on your eighth step list. And then that's what you work with your sponsor for, to see if there were harms done and if you need an amends. That to me is why they're separate, eight and nine. Do you weigh and measure? Personally, I do, because once again, we talked about this. The allergy is triggered in me when I eat volume. The way that I have the allergy not triggered is to weigh and measure. That is not necessary for all people. My mother's in Overeaters Anonymous. She's never weighed and measured and has been abstinent for 40 years. So I'm going to leave that one till later. I didn't get to that one yet. Yeah. Please give some example of what someone's abstinence might look like. No. That's why we have to go through the doctor's opinion, and we want to get it personalized for each of us. We do have a lot of overlapping, but I think we do a disservice when we try to define abstinence, because what happens is people start to mimic what a speaker is saying versus going through the process and discovering that for themselves. So... do you put resentments towards yourself on your inventory? Great question. My personal feeling is I was told in step three that selfish and self-centeredness is the root of my trouble. And the first thing I want to do is I want to put myself on the fourth step, and I want to put myself on the ninth step. I don't think that's very helpful. I need to get off of me and look at how I behave in the world. But I often tell people the best amends you can make to yourself is to do the steps. Do the steps thoroughly and stop thinking about yourself in that sense. Once again, other people might feel differently. I don't see anywhere in the big book it tells us to put ourselves on the fourth step, but other people might. Do I eat bread? Irrelevant. Irrelevant. Thank you, Kim. You're appreciated. Very relevant. Very relevant. Thank you. After having given their fifth step and taken the timeout reflection, why do you ask the sponsoree to call you after the time of the reflection? Because we go immediately into six and seven. We do the fifth step together. We take that break where they do the reflections on steps one through five. They call me back, and in about 10 or 15 minutes, we go through six, seven, and eight. Basically, what I told you in six and seven and eight is exactly what I tell my sponsees in six, seven, and eight. It takes like 10 minutes. What do you do when a sponsee has a slip or a binge? I get into meditation. I talk with God. I ask if I can be helpful to this person. And then I go back to that person and we have a discussion. We get serious about that it wasn't a slip. It was a break in their abstinence. And sometimes I continue to work with them, meaning we go back to step one. Sometimes I will tell them they need to find another teacher because maybe the way that I'm teaching isn't helpful to them. It's never the same answer. Once again, this is my opinion again. People who give generic, this is what you do, I get nervous about that because we should be getting directions from our higher power, not that we know all the answers. So I believe it's different for each person. Column four, can you please go over what you said about the fourth column? There are three in the big book, and one missed how you got to four. Okay. So on page 67, the first full paragraph, we avoid retaliation or argument. Oh, no, sorry. The second paragraph, referring to our list again, the second sentence, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? So those are the four. Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. How do you fourth step someone who was horribly abusive to you? Not any differently than anything else. You know, you're going to look at your selfishness, you're going to look at your dishonesty, you're going to look at your self-seeking, and you're going to look at your fear. I don't have that in my background. I try not to share things that are not in my background. I can just tell you some commonalities I see is the dishonesty is that, you know, it's not the first time this person's behaved, and yet I stay in the relationship. You know, selfishness might be that. Well, I'm not even going to go into it. I think there is a fourth column in there. If you're having, I've definitely had you know, fist ups I took and where someone honestly couldn't see the fourth column. I said, well, if you can't, let's, you know, leave that part blank and we'll go over it in your fifth step. And what often happens is as they're reading the other ones, they're like, oh my God, you know what? That one I couldn't figure out. It's the same thing. It's the same thing I'm doing with this other person. So. How do you help sponsees if they don't think their fourth step is thorough enough or effective? I can only present the fourth step the way the big book is. So I give them a time frame. They either show up or they don't. A lot of people just don't show up. And effective doesn't happen until you get into 10 and 11. And what I find is you can have the crappiest fourth step, but if you continue with the rest of the steps and start working 10 and 11, you're going to be fine. You can do the most quote-unquote thorough fourth step, and if you never get to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, it's not going to work and it's not going to be effective. It's the actions that we take as we keep moving through the steps. Okay, another question about vision, and I'm not here as a member of vision, so I'm not going to answer that question. What does it mean to you to be in the food? In doctor's opinion, I help people, and I have defined what my abstinence is. What are those foods, those ingredients, and those behaviors that create the phenomenon of craving? If I eat any of those foods, ingredients, or behaviors, or indulge in those behaviors, I am not abstinent, therefore I am in the food. Let me just give you one example, though, because there's a difference between a slip and a mistake. So I just want to give you an example. When I broke my ankle, it was the first time I ever had surgery, and I was in relapse at the time. 1 year out from the surgery, the doctor recommended that I have all the screws and the plates taken out of my ankle. It's more common now to have that done because that's when your bone's at maximum strength, and a lot of people have problems years later where the bone starts to grow around these things. So I had the surgery done on a Friday. It was right before Christmas. And I had my family over for Christmas Eve, the Saturday, the day after, and my neighbor always makes homemade cookies for everybody. And I had them on the table. I'm recovered. I don't mind having the cookies on the table for my father, but I swear to God, suddenly the food started dancing. For those of you of a certain age, remember going to the drive-in movies and they would have the advertisements for the concession stand? And the hot dogs and the cupcakes would be doing the Rockette thing? That's what was happening. It was literally vibrating. And I went into a room and I called a fellow, God incidents, she happened to be a nurse. And I told her what was happening. And she's like, whoa, you said you had surgery yesterday? And I said, yeah, why? She goes, I bet you they gave you a D5 drip. And I'm like, what's a D5 drip? In order to make the saline drip you get, last longer on the shelf, they infuse it with dextrose, which is sugar. I happen to be allergic to sugar. I am having sugar run through my veins. So number one, it was proof positive I have an allergy because I had no idea this is happening and my body was absolutely vibrating. I did not consider it a break in abstinence because I didn't understand that. It did not absolve me though from withdrawal. And it was some of the worst withdrawal I've ever had. It took 7 days of just absolute uncomfortability in my body. I had to lean into the steps. I was begging people to please let me work with you. Please let me go over the doctor's opinion with you. I needed to not be thinking about the fact that this sugar was running through my veins. So just to say, there's a difference between having a slip. Now, if I have surgery again and I'm not vigilant and ask about the D5 drip, that's different. It's different than the fact that I had it happen. It's different if you are at a restaurant and the next day you're starting to feel a little cagey and you think, shit, something was, I keep cursing, I'm sorry. Too much AA. if anyone knows Chris Raymer, you cannot listen to a Chris Raymer CD and not curse afterwards. And I totally lost my train of thought. Oh, and you're feeling you're feeling cagey. Maybe you had something in that sauce that you didn't know about. Once again, it was a mistake that went in there. But if you're just going, it looks close enough. I'm not going to research it. That's succumbing to the desire again. And that's why we have to have talks with our sponsors about this to see, is it something where I'm trying to test the boundaries of my abstinence because I'm not doing my step work, or did I actually succumb to the desire again? And sometimes I can't even answer that for my sponsees. They have to get quiet and let me know is what they're doing is crossing that line. So the way that you can do it is, this is my suggestion, is put on the doctor's opinion, the last page, what your abstinence is. And that way all you have to do is turn to that page. And as things come up, there's foods I've had to eliminate that were totally fine in the beginning, but I've had to eliminate them because I started to get the effect from them, and they've had to be added to that list. Nothing has ever come off the list. But I've definitely had to add stuff to the list. Okay. Can you please provide the PDFs of the third step prayers and the reading from the Friday night? What I'm asking people to do is just come up. I have all the stuff in here. You can just take pictures of it. And then you can, email it to each other or whatever. Some of it has URLs at the bottom, so you can look at that. I don't want to say non-approved OA stuff, even though I'm reading non-OA approved. There's a website called silkworth.net. That it has a lot of AA history. A lot of the stuff is actually off of that. And it's just a history thing for a bunch of AA stuff. I use sex inventory for all harms. Do you? No, I don't. But you know what? If you do and it works, great. I know a lot of people that do that. For me personally, when I got into step 9, I started to see those patterns. I saw how I showed up. I started to see that there was other stuff that had no resentment, no fears, and no sex conduct over that I knew I had to make amends for. But I have no problem with people using that as other harms. If it's effective for you, like for example, one of my really good friends, Maria, she does this third, I told you in the third column, you just check yes or no for, if it affects your self-esteem. She has this extended third column thing that goes into the three, uses some AA 12 and 12 stuff about the three instincts and all this kind of stuff. She gets so much out of it. It does nothing for me, so I don't use it. But when people are getting jammed up, I often refer them to Maria and say, call Maria, see if that extended third column works for you. We have to remember that we're not the be-all and end-all. One of the things, this is going to be more step 12 thing, but we should celebrate how we all do things differently. As long as we're, united on the 12 steps. So I feel it's my responsibility as an Overeaters Anonymous member to know people that use the 12 and 12 or use the workbook or use that new book that came out that uses, is that overlaps the AA 12 and 12, the OA 12 and 12, and the big book. I don't personally use it. But if someone wants to try that material, I should know other members of OA that use that material. If I say that I take 7 to 10 days, people in the 4 step, I know people that will take, they give their sponsees 2 months. I believe that God's going to arrange people that can help each other. And I should know, if somebody wants to do the steps more quickly than I do it, do I know members who take people through more quickly? There's a thing called Big Book Awakenings that's very popular in my area. It takes people through the steps in like 8 or 9 months. I don't particularly like it, but if someone wants to take that loan to go through the steps, I know which members in my area do that, and I refer them to them. We are so beautiful to have this incredible tapestry, and we shouldn't be competing against each other. We just need to each tell our truths. Okay. And that's end of the questions. So we're going to get into step 9, and we have 25 minutes. Okay, so I'm just going to kind of cherry pick this again. The way that I look at it is that the 9th step really has a bunch of warnings of what happens if we don't do this work. And then it really talks about what is the attitude or the way that we should approach a 9th step. So that's all I'm going to go over for this. So if we go to page 76 where we left off, I'm going to first go over all the warnings that it tells us. If you do not do this work, you will eat again. A good friend of mine in AA, he talks about we always lose people in 4, 9, and 12. And he calls it the 4th step The fourth step, fade away. The ninth step, not no show. And the 12th step, trap door. And I have to tell you, that's my experience. And that's why I think the big book specifically, 4 into 5, 9, and 12, gives a lot of warnings of what happens if you don't do the work. So on page 76, that last paragraph we read, now we need more action for step 8. The last sentence, remember it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. The next one I see is on the bottom of page 77, four lines up from the bottom. Simply, we tell them that we will never get over drinking until we've done our utmost to straighten out the past. We go to page 78. The second full paragraph that starts out, most alcoholics owe money. The last sentence. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. You notice it doesn't say we have to pay the money back. Not to say you don't have to pay the money back, but that's not when you make the amends. It's the fear of the creditors that's going to make us eat again. So we have to face that fear. If we can only afford to pay $10 a week, we make that amends, and then we make sure we continue to pay that $10 a week. Because the fear of owing that money is what's going to make us eat again. On page 79, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the eighth line down, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. I don't know about you guys, but I try to use that loophole about, you know, we don't make an amends if we're hurting them or others. I am not them, and I am not others. So my personal consequences are irrelevant when it comes to making an amends. Page 80. The fourth full paragraph, after consulting with his wife, the second sentence, he saw he had to place the outcome in God's hands or he would start drinking again and all would be lost anyhow. So all those warnings are telling us if we don't go through with this work, we're not going to recover. And at this point, you know, those 10-step promises are around the corner, so our ego is going to be kicking and screaming, trying to get us to not do this work. So the next thing I want to go over is kind of what does it look like? What kind of posture should we be getting in order to do these amends? So let's look at the top of page 77. Actually, I forgot to do this. Let me do this. I see my writing up here. One of my prejudices, again, I thought the ninth step was making an apology. A ninth step is making an amends. So what's the difference? So I have the definition for an apology is an offer an excuse for behavior. I actually apologize really well. I will apologize to a chair if I knock into it. I will apologize for treating you disrespectfully, and I will disrespect you tomorrow. The definition of an amends is to change for the better, to remove or correct faults, reparation or compensation for damage done. That's a little bit different than an apology. To change for the better, to remove or correct faults, reparation or compensation for damage done. And that's from Mr. Webster. Oh, I'm reading a definition from a dictionary. Yeah. So that's what is different for me is I have to figure out what is the harm. What's the harm? The harm is that fourth column, right? And this is, once again, this is just for me personally. I get index cards out, and I put each person on an index card, and I write my fourth column on the index card because that's what I'm making the harm for, that I'm making the reparations for. So that just helps me kind of get clear on it. Personally, I feel some accomplishment as that pile of amends to be made to amends already made, as that gives me some momentum to keep moving forward. Page 77, three lines down. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. So that's what, I mean, that's pretty big. I was always trying to be minimum service in everything. What's the least I can get away with? I mean, just one of the things I find, I have requirements for my sponsees. When they are trying to figure out what the minimum requirement is, I'm a little worried for them. If I tell them to make 2 phone calls and their first response is, like, you know, voicemails count, right? It's your recovery. You know, I'm telling you the minimum. If you call 5 or 6 people, it's only going to benefit you. It's not hurting me if you're leaving voicemails. So I now want to be of maximum and to fit ourselves. I heard that it was an AA person. It was not a compulsive overeater, but I was cracking up. She's like, you know, think about it when you get a really good pair of jeans and you put on like 5 pounds and the jeans don't really fit. But what you do is you really like the jeans, so you lay on your bed and you take pliers and you pull up the zipper and you stand up like this and you walk around because you can't even lean over. But you love those jeans. That's how uncomfortable this can be. And I thought, oh, God. Like, that's something we compulsive overeaters can really do. I will do anything to fit in that pair of jeans. But when it comes to my step work, let me see what's the least I can do. If we go down to 77 again, the second paragraph, we don't use this as an excuse for shying away. You see that? The last sentence, this to me is critical. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. That to me is the posture of an amends. I'll tell you one of the mistakes I made. I learned these steps, these prayers in step 4, the sick man's prayer, the fear prayer, the relationship prayers, and I left them in step 4. We learn them in step 4. I can't make an amends if I'm not using those prayers. If I'm not saying those prayers, my page turned again, I don't go with him with a helpful and forgiving spirit. It's still a current resentment. Confessing my former ill feeling, it's my current ill feeling. And expressing my regret, the only thing I'm regretting is having to do the stupid amends. So this is not a way to make an excuse to delay the amends, but it's just letting us know those prayers are essential for me to get into that posture so that I can make a sincere amends. Now this is, a friend of mine talks about the 4 A's. And it's basically, she just kind of took different parts of these pages and kind of made an acronym for herself. So she said that what it happens in an amends is you admit that you were wrong. I always think of Fonzie from Happy Days, wrong. You ask for forgiveness. You ask how you can make it right. And you ask if there's anything else I need to know. Now, the last one I have to say is more for interpersonal relationships. If I'm paying money back because I stole money from a movie theater by going to multiple movies and only paying once, I'm not really asking if there's anything else I need to know. But I have to tell you, specifically with family members, I learned more by asking that question than I did from the amends that I made. Because, see, I am so self-centered, I don't even know how I affect people. Admit if there's any, ask if there's anything else I need to know. So, for example, when I made my amends to my parents, and I made it separately, I was shocked, as I've been joking about, apparently my dad was not too thrilled that I had lived with him till I was 27. He was afraid because of all the weight that I gained that I was never going to be able to support myself and that I was never going to get a decent job and I was going to live with him the rest of my life. I didn't know when I lost the weight through bulimia that he was standing outside the bathroom seeing if I was throwing up. I had no idea about that. When I talked to my mom, I always thought my amends were for things that I did. What I found out from my mother was she was most angry about the things that I didn't do. I would buy a dress for a wedding, and then I would be humiliated because in that 4 weeks I gained so much weight I couldn't fit in it. And I wouldn't go to the wedding, and my mom had to go to that wedding and make an excuse again of why her daughter wasn't showing up. That I was undependable. That they never knew who was going to walk in the door. That they had to pick up all the slack for everything that I was supposed to do and wouldn't show up for. So I learned more by asking that question than I did in actually making the amends for what I thought my harms were. Admit we're wrong. Ask for forgiveness. ask, what can I do to make it right? And ask, is there anything else I need to know? I want to talk about another misconception here when you said ask for forgiveness. I think a lot of people, first of all, the big book doesn't really use the word forgiveness. It's about, you know, making reparations for harms done. But there's nothing about us needing to be, it's nothing about I need to be forgiven. I mean, I don't have, wait a minute. I'm saying this backwards. People think I have to forgive other people for what they did. And forgiveness is, I mean, just forgiveness is really powerful work, but it has really nothing to do with the amends process. Whether I'm asking for forgiveness, whether they forgive me or not, does not matter. You know, I'm not there saying I forgive you. I'm not even saying I'm condoning your behavior. That's not an amends. But I need to take responsibility for the role that I played and how my defects have popped up. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to give a couple examples of my amends. And once again, I just find experience speaks louder than anything else. So I always tell sponsees, if you're worried about something, call and ask for some examples of people's amends. If you're confused how you make an amends to a dead person, call someone, ask if they had to make an amends to a dead person. My big thing was, what if it doesn't turn out okay? So I was asking people for examples of amends that didn't turn out the way they wanted it to. So I'm just going to give you a couple of mine. One of the ones I really think that kept me stuck was I would go to a 9-step meeting and I'd think about the situation and I would ask someone like, oh, you don't want amends for that. And then I would go, okay. And then the next time there was a 9-step meeting, the same thing would come up. When I took it through this big book method, it was a totally different thing. So when I went into college, I got a job at a 7-Eleven locally, a franchise owner, this guy Pete. And looking back, I was very naive. Looking back at it now, I realized the guy was just a thief and a shyster. Like, he had so many scams going on of how to take advantage of his franchise. But one of the things is he taught us how to steal. And he would say, okay, if you want a hoagie, what to do is make a hoagie, but then backdate it 2 days and throw the wrapper in the write-off bin, you can have your free hoagie. If you want a candy bar, rip open the candy bar, eat the candy bar, put the wrapper into the bin, and, you know, you don't pay for the candy bar. So everyone told me, well, I don't owe money. My boss told me to do it. You know, 7-Eleven's not owing me money. But I had to look at, where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? I knew it was wrong. I was working against my morals because, you know, it's selfishly and self-seeking. If they're getting away with it, I'm going to get away with it. I'm not going to be the sucker that's paying for my food if they're all getting away with it. So I had to see, how do I make an amends for that? Because they're right. I don't owe the money to Pete. I don't owe the money to 7-Eleven. So it got quiet with my higher power, and I started to think about, talking about other harms, all the food that I've taken from the world. And I decided that I was going to give food to a food bank. This was back when the recession was really big in 2010. And I called a local food bank, and I asked them what food they needed. And they said, whatever you can give us, we're really low. I said, no, I'm going to go out and buy it. I said, what do you need? They were so excited. And they gave me this list. And because they were so excited, I knew I couldn't make the donation because it was going to be all ego. So I had my father give the food to the food bank. And it was, you know, I gave a significant chunk of money, but I can afford it. And I got quiet. I said, you know, God, I need to feel this on a more personal level. So what I decided to do was not go out to eat for 6 weeks. So that every meal I ate at home, I thought about all the food that I stole from the world. And just to let you know how this bleeds into other things, I work at an auto auction, and I used to work on this Subaru account, and when I worked on it, I would get a free lunch ticket. Well, I stopped working on the account, but they still kept giving me the lunch ticket. And I'm recovered now, and I thought to myself, I'm not entitled to this lunch ticket. I'm going to give away my recovery to save $6. It's crazy. But I had to go into go through the process, because if I had gone to my employer and paid them for these lunches, I would have gotten the person in trouble who gave me the lunch tickets. So that's when I would cause additional harm. So the next time she offered me the lunch ticket, I said to her, you know what, I realize now that I am not entitled to this because I no longer work in this account, so I'm not going to take the lunch ticket anymore. Okay. No skin off her back. But I knew I couldn't do that. Now, once again, I am sad. So what it started to bleed into is I started to you know, I have three paycheck months, and I said, well, let me, I'll just buy some extra food. I'll give it to this food bank. I live in a town that's very economically challenged, and I could not believe when I went there how empty the shelves were. It was in June. And I said to her, I said, is it normally this bad? And she's like, Kim, this is a really, well, she knows my name, but this is a really scary time of the year. Now, in my, the high school, in the grammar school in my area, 70% of the kids qualify for free lunch. And this summer terrifies the parents because that one meal that they're used to their kids getting, they're not going to have now. And they're wondering if they're going to have enough food for their kids. So I have for the last couple years, every other paycheck, I buy foods, and I have a fun with it. You know, sometimes I'll buy, like, Italian. Sometimes I'll buy, we have a lot of Hispanics in my town, buy Hispanic food. Sometimes I'll pick breakfast. Sometimes I'll pick treats that I would never buy for myself, but other people who aren't compulsive overeaters can eat it. And I was still feeling this pull about, I want to do something more personally. Do you guys have Aldi out here? Do you have that store, Aldi? No? Aldi is a great. It's a great store, and you have to pack your own. Like, they don't bag for you everything. You have to do your bagging yourself. So after I paid for stuff, I'm sitting there bagging, and I hear this little rustle, you know, going on behind me. And this woman's there, and she's apologizing, and this kid's misbehaving. And I went over there to see what was going on, and here she had an EBT card, which is the food stamp card. And she didn't have enough to pay for all her stuff, and she's all upset and panicking because she's deciding what food she can't afford for the week. And I went up to her, and I said to her, I said, could you do me a favor and please let me pay for this? And she's like, what? I said, just let me pay for the balance. And she put it through, and I paid for the balance, and she was crying. And I just said, listen, when you're in a better situation, please just do something for another person. And I'm not saying this to toot my own horn. The reason I'm saying this is I am sure because of where I live, that is not the first time that has happened to me, that scenario has gone there. But because of prayer, it's the first time I noticed it. So these amends will continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness for us. I'll give you another example. I was very passive-aggressive. I talk behind people's backs all the time. It's not good to go up to someone and say, I'm sorry that I called you a bitch behind your back for the last 5 years. So this girl, Karen, I really trashed her all the time. I dated this guy, Dennis. We broke up. We stayed friends. He was dating this friend, Karen. Everybody hated her. I can justify exactly why we all hated her. And I got to get quiet, and I had to look at where I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Now, I didn't want to date Dennis anymore, but I was really annoyed that he found someone so quickly and I was still single. And it ticked me off. So what is my harm? My harm is who I gossiped with. So I had to go to the people I gossiped with, and when the next time her name came up, I had to tell them my fourth column. I'm really sorry. I will not talk about Karen anymore. I'm realizing that it's my own loneliness, and I'm using her as a punching bag. And then I had to compliment Karen to her face because I talk so much behind her back. And I couldn't just go up and say, hey, Karen, you have nice shoes. I sat there the next couple of times I saw her and I prayed about it, and suddenly this peace came over me. And I went up to her and I said, Karen, I want to thank you for how happy you make my friend. I've never seen Dennis as happy as he's been with you. And it was true. And they're married now and we get along great. But just to give you some examples of what that means to do that, I'll give you another example for an institution. I wanted to make an amends to the Catholic Church, and we Catholics go to confession, so I decided to do that, and I went back to my grammar school church, and for those of you who are not Catholic, when you go to confession, you're in a box, and there's something that separates you from the priest, so you cannot see the priest, and I say that I'm in OA, and I'm doing the step work, and I explain to him what's going on, and he started to babble like a frickin' idiot, and I'm like, what? And all of a sudden I realized it was my grade school principal's voice. It was Father Murphy. And I'm like, oh, my God. But I also started to have this feeling come over me that he was really, really trying to help me. And he was really, really bad at doing it. And in that moment I thought to myself, I thought the Catholic Church wanted me to be perfect. And since I couldn't be perfect, I left. What I realized now was I expected the Catholic Church to be perfect. And when it wasn't perfect, I left. Sister Helen embarrassed me in fourth grade, therefore all nuns are jerks. Some sick men touch boys, therefore all priests are absolute jerks. And I have to tell you, I am not a practicing Catholic, but I can go into any church, any synagogue. I mean, my church, I always joke, all they do in my town is they pray and they die. I mean, 10,000 people. I think we have like six cemeteries. At the end of my street is a synagogue, which is across the street from the Catholic Church, which is one block over from the Episcopalian Church, which is across the street from the Quaker meeting house. Back out my back yard, out of my back window, I can see the Baptist temple thingy or whatever that thing's called. I mean, it is unbelievable. I feel at home in any of them, but I don't feel drawn to any specific one. One of the greatest gifts of the ninth step is neutrality. The goal of to me, the ninth step is not forgiveness, it is freedom. I still live about 20 minutes from where I grew up. I can walk anywhere in Burlington County, New Jersey, and not be afraid of who I'm going to run into. That is freedom. This is not about repairing relationships. The two things I often see people do is they're afraid to make an amends because they're afraid the person won't forgive them and the relationship won't be repaired. Or the opposite. They're afraid, well, if I make amends, they're going to want to be my friend again. And I don't want to be their friend. It's about the fact that we want to walk free on this earth. It's absolutely about freedom. Okay, so we have 2 minutes. I'm going to... I'm going to wait since we have some time. So remind me tomorrow that I'm going to start on page 82 versus right into the 10th step, and we'll do that. So thank you guys very much. I see people are getting a little bit tired, and I understand that because I'm tired too. And have a great night, everyone.